Hi, I'm John Weber. My guest today is vocalist Marissa Mulder. She's made her mark in the New York cabaret scene with her extraordinary vocal instrument and talent for phrasing that earned her a spot on the Times Square Chronicle's top 10 list of 2011. The Wall Street Journal says Marissa Mulder has a vocal timbre reminiscent of Blossom Deary, but has a style and show that's all her own. Marissa Mulder, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you, John. I'm so happy to be here today.
My pleasure. Now, Marissa, tell me how you first got excited about the American Popular Songbook.
Well, it started when I was very young. I grew up in Syracuse, New York, and I was fortunate enough to grow up around the corner from my grandparents, who I saw pretty much every day. And it was really my grandfather that first played for me the great stuff, you know, Frank Sinatra, Billy Eckstein, Ella Fitzgerald. And at a very young age, I just really gravitated towards that material. And he was always so shocked by how much I loved it. So that was really where our relationship kind of strengthened and became so special, listening to that music together.
Yeah, because you were probably, I would imagine you had an iPod or perhaps in those days even a Walkman. You probably listened to some things other than the American Popular Songbook as most teenagers would.
A little bit. I did. I did listen to other things, but I much preferred the Great American Songbook. I much preferred Judy Garland and Frank Sinatra and the way they took apart lyrics and the way they sang a song.
So where would you listen to music together? On the hi-fi at home, the turntable, or some other place? Where would you go?
At home, and also in the car with him, he had this rusty old beat-up Toyota Camry, and we would listen to his cassette tapes in the car, a lot of jazz, a lot of the standards. We would take these rides. In particular, he would take me on rides out to the Indian reservation to get these big cartons of Parliament Light cigarettes, which he got a great deal for. So that was a time we spent together, which wasn't really aiding in his health, but that's when we would listen to this music in his car mostly.
So you had the mobile jazz club complete with the smoke.
That's right, complete with the smoke. So, you know.
Well, he must have been very proud of you hearing you sing these old tunes that he grew up with.
He was. He was constantly shocked by it and very happy, too. And, you know, he's no longer here, but I feel him everywhere, especially with everything that's happening lately, the types of performing I'm doing, the types of shows I'm working on. I think he would have gotten a really big kick out of all this stuff that's happening, especially being here with you today. So,
well, Marissa, I would love to hear you sing something from the American Popular Songbook. What do you feel like starting out with?
I think I'd like to start with Day In, Day Out.
I love Day In, Day Out. Let's do it.
Great. Day in, day out, the same old hoodoo follows me about. The same old pounding in my heart whenever I think of you. And darling, I think of you day in and day out. Day out, day in. I needn't tell you how my days begin. When I awaken with a tingle. One possibility in view, that possibility of maybe seeing you. Come rain, come shine, I meet you, and to me the day is fine. Oceans roar, a thousand drums. Can't you see it's love? Can there be any doubt? When there it is, day in, day out. With a tingle,
one possibility in view, that possibility of maybe seeing you. Come rain, come shine, I meet you, and to me the day is fine. Then I kiss your lips, and the pounding becomes the ocean's roar, a thousand.
Wow, Marissa, you're swinging, man. I love that.
Oh, thanks, John. That was a kick, right?
I love that song. Yeah, about 1940, Rube Bloom and...
Johnny Mercer.
Thank you. I knew you knew. I knew you. So you know this kind of stuff.
I knew it.
You're a great researcher, in fact. But I just... your vocal quality, I have to say, there's something about it. You know, whenever I hear you sing, either when I'm accompanying you somewhere in New York or watching it from the audience, I feel as if you're singing directly to me.
And that's really nice of you. Well, I appreciate that. And that's, I know that's so important to me when I go to see a show or hear a singer. I want to feel that immediate connection and I want to get to know who they are, who they really are.
And it's almost as if you're communicating a story, are you, which is, I would imagine, part of a big part of vocal jazz anyway.
Absolutely. The lyrics are so important. I mean, that's really the most important part, I think, the story you're telling.
And where did you pick that up? Where do you suppose that ability, is it innate? Did you start doing it even when you were a kid, or when do you
think? It started young. And again, my grandfather's influence with the music we listened to. I remember watching The Wizard of Oz with him and sitting on his lap. I was about 5 years old. And I still remember when Judy Garland sang Over the Rainbow. Something clicked. Even at that young age, I thought, there's so much going on. Even at a young age, I detected so much depth in what she was doing, in the subtext and in her emotional approach. And that's what really drew me initially to those standards. The lyrics are so stunning. And Harold Arlen is one of my favorite composers. And Yip Harburg, one of my favorite lyricists. I just think their writing is so magical.
Yeah. Well, are there any other Harold Arlen, Yip Harburg tunes that you learned as a after watching The Wizard of Oz?
Yes. My favorite Harold Arlen tune is It's Only a Paper Moon. And that was my grandfather's favorite song as well, so we shared that. And each time I sing it, I think of him. And, you know, it's typically, it's got this music box feel, and it's very upbeat and bright, but it's actually a very sad lyric. It's a very poignant lyric, and... out of all the songs Yip Harburg wrote the lyrics for, he felt that this was the one that best represented the way he viewed the world around him. You know, sort of that sense of keeping your feet firmly rooted in reality, but your head and your heart reaching upwards toward the stars.
That's poetry.
Thank you, John.
Yip Harburg said, how do you know all these quotes? You really know your stuff.
Well, I care very deeply about this music.
I would love to do It's Only a Paper Moon with you.
I would love to do that too.
I never feel a thing is real when I'm away from you. Out of your embrace, the world's a temporary parking. A bubble for a minute. You smile. The bubble has a rainbow in it. Say it's only a paper moon. Sailing over a cardboard sea. just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
That was gorgeous.
Thank you, John.
And you're right. People are accustomed to hearing that song kind of fast and jaunty and jolly, when in fact, I listen to that song in a different way when I play it at that tempo, especially hearing you sing it.
Yes. It's a haunting song.
And tell me the history of this song, because you know these kind of things, and I want to know something more about It's Only a Paper Moon.
Well, it originally came from a show called The Great Magoo. And it had a different title. The title was If You Believed in Me. And it was written for the character of this carnival barker who was so disillusioned and disenchanted with the world around him until he fell in love. And then everything changed.
Suddenly he looked at the bright side.
Suddenly, yes. He looked at the bright side and things took on a new meaning and came to life.
That's good optimistic thinking. That is typical of Yip Harburg's lyrics, isn't it?
Yes, that's why I love Yip so much. A very dreamlike, a magic quality, you know, like fairy dust or something.
Yeah. He teamed up with certainly a lot of great composers as well. Burton Lane, I think he wrote Finian's Rainbow later
on. That's right, Finian's Rainbow, gorgeous score.
Mm-hmm. And if a clear day you can see forever.
Oh, yes.
Now, is there any composer of American jazz standards who appeals to you in a very special way?
Yes, there is. Hmm. And his name is Jimmy Van Heusen.
Jimmy Van Heusen. Is that his real name?
No, it isn't. He was born in 1913 in Syracuse, just like me. Well, I wasn't born in 1913. But his real name was Edward Chester Babcock. And when he was 16 years old, he was cutting school to work as a disc jockey on the local radio station. And his manager said, you know, Edward, this name, Edward Chester Babcock, is not a good radio name. So it was around when he was 16 when he developed his name, Jimmy Van Heusen, by looking at a billboard ad for Van Heusen shirts. And I think Jimmy was the name of a favorite cousin of his. So voila.
Jimmy Van Heusen was born.
Jimmy Van Heusen was born.
Rechristened.
Yes.
And he's a fellow Syracusian. Now, you do the music of Jimmy Van Heusen. I've actually seen a show of yours where you feature nothing but Jimmy Van Heusen.
I do. And it was so much fun to work on. I still do it occasionally. And I learned so much about Jimmy, especially his childhood. He grew up just a couple blocks from where I grew up. And he was a real wild child. I mean, he was expelled from three different schools in the Syracuse area. And then did get into Syracuse University, but only stayed there about a year. So he was definitely a rebel. But he started writing his own songs when he was 11 years old and composed some of his biggest hits in his head when he was 11, 12, 13, and a definite genius.
What did he write at age 11, 12?
Imagination.
Come on, really?
Yeah, he wrote it for a girl in school. He wrote the melody. He had a crush on a girl in school, which he loved girls. That continued his whole life.
Uh-oh.
And, but yeah, that's where it came from.
You certainly know a lot about it. I would like to do one of his songs, maybe even one of his Oscar winners. What do you think? He won four, right?
That would be terrific. He won four, and this is one of the Oscar-winning songs. And this song is very familiar. It's very famous. But there's a funny story about it.
Which song?
All the Way.
Oh.
From The Joker is Wild.
Ah. Tell me the story.
Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen wanted to play this song for Frank Sinatra, and they were in Las Vegas. And there was a rule in Las Vegas that you were never to wake up Frank before 4:30 in the afternoon. Because, he was up till the very wee small hours of the morning. And they had to wake him up at 2:30 this particular day. So Sammy Kahn said that Frank comes out of his bedroom looking like he'd been hit by a train in his pajamas. And Jimmy Van Heusen sits down at the piano and Sammy Kahn sings the lyric. And when they're finished, Frank looks at Jimmy and then he looks over at Sammy and he says, "Let's eat." And they said from Frank Sinatra at 2:30 in the afternoon in Vegas, that was high praise. And that was the song, All the Way.
I would love to hear you sing All the Way.
Well, I'd be glad to sing it for you.
When somebody loves you, it's no good unless he loves you all the way. Happy to be near you when you need someone to cheer you all the way. Taller than the tallest tree is, that's how it's got to feel. Deeper than the deep blue sea is, that's how deep it goes if it's real. And when somebody needs you, it's no good unless he needs you all the way. Through the good or lean years and for all the in-between years, come what may. Who knows where the road will lead us? Only a fool would say. But if you let me love you, it's for sure I'm gonna love you all the way, all the way. Somebody needs you, it's no good unless he needs you all the way. Through the good or lean years and for all the in-between years, come what may. Who knows where the road will lead us? Only a fool would say. Let me love you, it's for sure I'm gonna love you all.
That was absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you, John.
You really make every word count, much like the singer-songwriters who you interpret. And I've heard you do some music that is outside of the canon of the American popular song. I've heard you do some singer-songwriter material as well from within my lifetime.
Yes. I love to sing Joni Mitchell, especially her song Both Sides Now. It's one of my favorite songs. I think it's just heartbreaking, and I think it's just such a brilliant song. And she actually wrote that song in 1967 when she was only 24 years old, which just completely blows my mind. To think that she was capable of writing that at such a young age, definitely an old soul. And I know at that point had been through a lot too, but I love the pictures her lyrics paint.
Me too. I would love to do Both Sides Now with you. Would you like to do that?
Yes, I'd love that.
Rose and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, dizzy dancing way you feel, as every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show, and you leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds, I've looked at life that way, but now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads, they say I've changed, but something's lost and something's gained in living every day. I've looked adopted life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life.
Man, I got a lump in my throat still. It was really pretty.
Thank you, John.
What a quality you have. Your voice, my God, what a sound. Just there's power and there's poise and there's anticipation and sensuality. Everything is in that song. And that song, and tell me, what is it about? Joni wrote that at age 24.
Yeah.
What happened? I mean, you've heard her sing it later, right?
I have. And it was so effective to hear her sing it later because I know the key was lower. Her voice was a lot lower and smokier and had this wonderful deep quality that wasn't there when she was in her 20s. So it felt just so touching and so lived in when she did that. But just to think that she wrote that at such a young age and then to be able to sing it again and again as she experienced the world is... It's a really neat thought.
As she grew into her own song.
Absolutely. Yeah, as she grew into her own song. It's amazing, really.
Now, when you perform a tune which is generally sung by someone who's a lot older than you, I mean, tell me what you do as an actress to summon the narrative required for such a song.
Well, I think both sides now, I think any artist can relate to it at any age. I certainly... Even though I'm in my 20s, I still relate to that song and looking at the world both sides, from both angles, from the positive and the negative, from the bright and the bleak. And I think, especially living in a city like New York and working to sing and pay your rent and do your work and get some recognition. It's such an upward battle, and things definitely lose their glossy touch as you get older. So I sort of summon feelings I had as a child, the way I looked at nature and the world and my family and all the possibilities of my dreams, and sort of how that's changed as the years go by, both how it's strengthened and how, you know, life can throw a wrench in some of your ideas and your dreams. And that's what I like to bring to that song.
Yeah. You know, and you do have this childlike wonder in your voice. I mean, you sound like a woman, but you have this sort of, you've never lost that sort of magical feeling that you have. I got to read a quote from the Wall Street Journal. She achieves the remarkable feat of bringing to life the illusions of youth from the perspective of one who has not yet experienced disillusion.
I like that.
How do you like
that? Who wrote that?
Will Friedwald said that about you.
That's very nice.
Well, there's more coming up with vocalist Marissa Mulder. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR Music. Marissa, nobody starts at the top in New York. When you first arrived here, what sort of challenges did you need to overcome in order to start actually paying your rent with your voice?
Well, it was really about confidence building and summoning up the courage to really put myself out there and be heard and be known and network. When I first arrived in New York, I was working at Barnes & Noble in the children's section. I've had a lot of odd jobs. I've worked as a waitress for a brief period of time.
Where?
I worked as a waitress at the Iridium, the jazz club, for 2 weeks.
2 weeks,
I was a waitress. My first real night as a waitress. I managed to lock myself in the walk-in freezer. And that was just the most horrifying experience of my life. I had 5 tables all waiting for me. I went into this walk-in freezer to get some butter. And to my dismay, I could not get out. So I was only a waitress at the Iridium for 2 weeks. But not too long ago, I had the privilege of singing at the Iridium on the stage. Like I said to the manager, this is much better for me than being back in the freezer. I'm not a very good waitress. Now I'm a nanny. I nanny for 6 kids here in New York. And but a lot of odd jobs, you know, just trying to pay the rent and pay for the shows, pay for the musicians. It's really a sacrifice, but I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Yes, and you certainly sound wonderful, especially with those singer-songwriters. This is really a specialty. There must be some quality about that music that draws you in. What is it you like about singer-songwriters?
Well, I think it's such a personal expression. You know, it's a window into the writer's soul. And these songs become so much more than songs. They become so personal, and you can relate to them. You can feel less alone, or you can identify with the writer. And somebody I identify with quite a bit is Tom Waits. His music is so fantastic, and he's such an incredible writer. And I love his story. I love the way he talks about his childhood and his influences, Jack Kerouac and Charles Bukowski, but also being so strongly influenced by the Tin Pan Alley and Hoagy Carmichael and Johnny Mercer. A really interesting fellow he is.
Very intelligent, and I can see why you admire him so much. We should do something of his.
Yes, I'd love to sing his song called I'm Still Here from his album Alice, which is, of course, all about Alice from Alice in Wonderland and her relationship with Lewis Carroll.
I would love to do I'm Still Here with you.
That's great. Like Tom says about Alice, these are children's songs for adults.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. What was it that you wanted me for? You haven't looked at me that way in years. Your watch has stopped and the pond is clear. Someone turn the lights back on. Love you till all time is gone. You haven't looked at me that way in years, but I'm still.
I have never heard Tom Waits sound that wonderful.
I don't have the growl and the raspiness Tom does. Some days, if I stay out late enough, up early.
But it's so nice to hear it sung by a voice as beautiful, an instrument as beautiful as yours. And I love Tom's singing too, but just the combination of your timbre and your quality of your, it's so pretty.
Thank you so much. You know, outwardly, I know it would seem, I mean, obviously, him and I are very different, but I also do relate to him on many levels, as an artist, as a person. He sort of seems to me like a man out of time, kind of on his own page. And there's a funny story. When he was a kid growing up in California, he would spend time with his friends, but his friends said that he would spend more time talking to their fathers about Frank Sinatra and looking at their records while his friends were out playing basketball. So he's just, in that way, I relate to him. He's got this nostalgic thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear that the music resonates with you personally and nostalgically on multiple levels, and you're a really, really fine interpreter of Tom Waits' music.
Thank you. And that song, I'm Still Here, is written from the perspective of Alice, you know, from Alice in Wonderland, but as a grown woman in her 80s. So it's very touching to think of this little girl made famous by this story and then to see her as this old woman sort of saying, I'm still here. It's very powerful stuff.
That I didn't know that. You really grasp everything that song is about. And it did feel, now that I think about it, like an older person sort of recalling their youth.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and like Tom's music to me, they're like broken lullabies almost. These haunting, some of them are very childlike, but, you know, not a typical lullaby. Very, very powerful, very, very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And there you are again, bringing your theater chops into it to portray someone who is significantly older than you.
That's right.
Told with a childlike voice, sort of like reminiscing about things that happened a long time ago.
Absolutely.
Fondly. Well, you're really good with doing those songs that are filled with that childlike wonder and yet really singing songs about triumph over hard times.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think, you know, I do work as a nanny. That's what I do to pay my bills for 6 kids. And I spend a lot of time with children, and they really keep me on my toes. But it's great spending time with them because, you know, kids are so perceptive. And if you're feeling a little down or if you're not totally present, they know immediately if something's wrong. So I find when I'm with them, I'm really present there with them. I have to be each moment. And they've really influenced a lot of the music I gravitate towards and my approach to singing and keeping that wonder because they're so full of that. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to spend time with them and hear what they have to say.
So when you're hanging out with the kids, are you ever playing any of your favorite vocalists in your jazz? Are you sort of hipping them to the jazz?
I'm trying. I talk a lot about Judy Garland. I talk a lot about Cole Porter. One of the girls I babysit was singing a Cole Porter tune, and I said, do you know who wrote that? And she said, no. And I said, here's who wrote it. Go tell your music teacher that was written by Cole Porter. And I said, he'll be blown away. So I don't know if she did it or not. Sometimes she listens to me, sometimes she doesn't. But I thought it would be neat if a 9-year-old knew that information. So I try to pass on to them the types of music I like, and I think they appreciate it. One of the girls in the family, she loves theater. She loves musical theater, and she tries out for the shows at school. So I try to encourage her, and, you know, and I said to her, she didn't get a part she wanted once, and I said to her, you know, I'm sorry to tell you this, but it's only going to get harder as you grow up. And she said, thanks a lot. You're telling me that it's just going to get worse? That's terrible advice. I said, I'm just trying to be your friend and your ally and say you've got to toughen up, and if you really want to do this, you can do it, but you're going to face some rejection, unfortunately.
Well, that's very sweet, Marissa. Your grandfather passed all this information and love and music to you, and here you are passing it on to another generation.
Yeah, you know, it's great to think of it that way, and I'm so happy to do it. There's so many fantastic songs and so many fantastic artists that these kids should really know about. It's so important, I think.
I would love to hear another American Popular Songbook tune. What do you think? What are you thinking about doing?
Well, there's one I like very much called Rhode Island is Famous for You.
That famous Rand McNally Liszt song.
That's right, with so many words.
You remember all of them.
I hope so.
Let's do it.
Okay. Every state has something that its Rotary Club can boast of. Some product that the state produces the most of. Rhode Island is little, but oh my, it has a product anyone would buy. Copper comes from Arizona. Peaches come from Georgia. And lobsters come from Maine. The wheat fields are the sweet fields of Nebraska. And Kansas gets bonanzas from the grain. Old whiskey comes from old Kentucky. Ain't the country lucky? New Jersey gives us glue. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island is famous for you. Cotton comes from Louisiana. Gophers from Montana and spuds from Idaho. They plow land in the cow land of Missouri, where most beef meant for roast beef seems to grow. Grand Canyons come from Colorado. Gold comes from Nevada. Divorces also do. And you come from Rhode Island, little old Rhode Island is famous for you. Pencils come from Pennsylvania, vests from West Virginia, and tents from Tennessee. They know mink where they grow mink in Wyoming, a camp chair in New Hampshire, that's for me. Minnows come from Minnesota, coats come from Dakota, but why should you be blue? For you come from Rhode Island, little old Rhode Island is famous for you. You come from Rhode Island, don't let him ride.
Wow, Marissa, I think I've gigged in every single one of those states.
I'm sure you have, John.
It's a really great song. I love the – who Blossom did that, right?
Blossom Dearie did that, yes. That was one of her big ones. She covered so many fantastic songs and really put her own stamp on them. I mean, for me, it's hard to think of another version besides hers.
And clearly you're a big admirer, as the New York Times even observed. They described you as engagingly sunny with a bounce and twinkle that recall the much-missed Blossom Dearie.
Yes, I was so thrilled by that mention because I'm such a fan of her and her style. I watch her a lot late nights on YouTube. I listen to a lot of her recordings, and she was so subtle, and it was always so delicate, you know, never forced or in your face. And I really appreciate that about her. She really had such a huge following and was kind of like a New York treasure.
And a terrific piano player on top of that.
That's right. Amazing piano player.
And a songwriter.
I know.
She even wrote together with, I know that she certainly did a lot of music of Dave Frischberg's. I mean, she didn't just go into the American Popular Songbook either. She did new things by Frischberg and Tom Waits and some of those people. We should do a Frischberg. I'm thinking about him now.
That is a great idea. I'm a huge fan of his. And I fortunately got to see him live at the Algonquin, which was one of the greatest shows I've seen here in New York City by far.
I love that. In fact, I saw you there. It was.
Oh, yeah, that's right, John.
I was told I went five times. So, I mean, I was there practically every night. He was there. He's just wonderful. Let's do a Dave tune, a Dave Frischberg
song. I would love to. How about My Attorney Bernie?
I love it. Let's do it.
Great.
That was so much fun.
Thank you. It was awesome.
How do you remember all those words?
I don't know. I just pray and no, I study hard.
You study. You work so hard at your craft, and I watch you on stage, and you have the audience in the palm of your hand.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I can't believe this hour is almost up. I'm so sad.
I know.
But we do have time for one more number. What do you think? Maybe you tell me. What do you want?
Well, I'd love to sing another Jimmy Van Heusen tune that he wrote with Sammy Kahn called Come Fly With Me. Do you know it?
I sure do. 1959. That's one of my favorites. I think Frank Sinatra wanted to have that in Hole in the Head, but they didn't put it in the film.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I knew something you didn't know.
That's, you did.
A first.
Oh, please.
Let's do Come Fly With Me.
Let's do Come Fly With Me. And an interesting story. What I think of when I think of Come Fly With Me is that Jimmy Van Heusen, actually during World War II, was a test pilot for the war. So he would get up very early, 4 a.m. every morning, and he would be test flying airplanes under his real name, Edward Chester Babcock. Then in the afternoon, he was writing songs over at Paramount for Bing Crosby under Jimmy Van Heusen, and nobody knew about this double life he was leading. Wow. So he was a very interesting man.
Well, let's do In Honor of Jimmy Van Heusen, Come Fly With Me.
Come Fly With Me.
When Dad and Mother discovered one another, they dreamed of the day when they would love and honor and obey. And during all their modest spooning, they'd blush and speak of honeymooning. And if your memory recalls, they spoke of Niagara Falls. But today, my darling, today, when you meet the one you love, you say, come fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly. Some exotic booze. There's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly away. Come fly with me. Let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band. Flute for you. Come fly with me. Let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so flying honeymoon, they say.
Awesome. I love that.
Thank you, John.
Marissa, thanks for being on Piano Jazz.
Thank you for having me. I've had a ball.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with John Weber and his guest, Marissa Mulder. This program is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hirsch Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Freeman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire. Mastering Engineer David Mitchell. Production Manager Grant Jackson. Production Assistant Laura Hunsberger. The Executive Producer is Kobe Hennessy. The Executive in Charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, Director and Executive Producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. For more information about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz, or to listen to a program, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.